And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Today we're going to be looking at a subject that, well, has to do with your money. Now, you may not have a lot of money. You may have some money, or you may have a great amount of money. It doesn't really matter. Is it really your money? Can the government just take whatever money it wants, take your bank account and say it's ours? Thank you for letting us keep it. A lot of people worry they're going to do that. Of course, they promise you retirement system, pensions, and then suddenly they say we don't have enough money, we're going to have to cut it. And all kinds of shenanigans to get people's money. Well, money. You know, in my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, I have a chapter there about money, money and the Jews. It seems that Jesus Christ gave them a choice. He gave the Jews a choice. Now, a lot of folks forget that this is in the Bible, but it's very interesting. Jesus said they must choose between God and mammon. What is mammon? Well, mam means a mammary gland. That's the breast of the great goddess. That was mam, and man was the world. The money of the world, the material of the world, the material of the goddess of Babylon. That's what she offered everybody, prosperity. You can have prosperity. It can be guaranteed to you. The devil will give it to you, or you can serve God. God may give it to you, or he may not. I believe sometimes God has not allowed certain people to be successful because he knows their heart would blacken, would darken, and they would go against God. And so he's left them poor. And sometimes God knows better than we do. I've been in situations where, you know, Juan and I were very tight. We didn't know we were going to make it to next payday. You know about these times where you rob your piggy banks? Well, we didn't have any money. The house wanted to go get a hamburger. And, I searched through all my pants pockets, the pants that I'd worn, and in all the drawers, and to get a nickel here and a dime here. I remember even rifling up underneath the, what'd you call them, the pillows or the cushions, find 30 or 40 cents. We'll go down and get us a hamburger. We had enough gas with the car to get down to a hamburger place. Well, we were younger then. I guess foolish. But one thing God has told me is don't go into debt. This ministry is free and clear. We own this building. We own all the computers and the furniture and the furnishings for this ministry. We don't owe 1 cent. And we're not tax exempt. We're not a non-profit tax exempt 501c3 organization because, well, we were that one time. Then the government said, we can tell you what to do. We can tell you what to preach, what to say, because after all, you're a non-profit group approved by the government as long as you behave yourself, Mr. Mars. Well, you know, folks, I've never been one to behave myself. I've had such misconduct. You know, the world wants me to do it this way, and God wants to do it that way, and I just do it God's way, and I get in trouble with the world. So I told the old IRS, well, I just don't want your old 501c3. And I believe that the people that support this ministry don't want it either. You know, I think I had one person out of thousands that complained. He wanted to get a tax, you know, break for the money he gave to the ministry. Well, couldn't give him that, but we thanked him, and you know, Jesus knows how to take care of that. You're going to get more than a tax break. You'll get blessed beyond you won't even be able to to stand it. That's been my experience. And this ministry has exploded in numbers and authority and influence around the world because we stayed true for Christ. Now, I want to talk to you about money today. Money. But I want to talk to you about bankers and presidents. The presidents of the United States. They've all had money dilemmas. They had to approve a national bank, a Fed Reserve, or not approve one. Since the beginning of time, from George Washington on, America has needed money, and sometimes has got it unlawfully, and Rothschild has lent us money, and Rothschild has taken money from us. It seems we've always been battling the Rothschild since the beginning of the American Revolution against England. Back in 1776, 1787, 1791, three key dates in American history. Oh, Rothschild was in there then. Did I ever tell you about Chaim Soloman? Chaim Soloman was a Jewish gentleman. He's been called the financier of the American Revolution. He was a Jew and a Rothschild associate. And the American Continental Congress needed money. They went to him. They went to this Jew and got a loan. Wow. Chaim Soloman loaned the fledgling America's 13 colonies, lent us money. If he had not lent us money, we couldn't have become a nation. Chaim Soloman. Now, should we compliment Chaim Soloman? You know, I visited the American Jewish Museum in Philadelphia. It's right across from the Liberty Bell. I think they changed their location now, but they're right across from the Liberty Bell in downtown Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I went to visit them, and there, as I began, right before I entered, I looked, and they said, this building is dedicated to Chaim Soloman. Wow. The American Jewish Museum, the building is dedicated to Chaim Soloman. Should we thank Chaim Soloman for money? Well, I'm sure he got it back with interest. I'm sure Rothschild got it back with interest. From the very beginning, we were in hock to the Rothschilds in America. Then later, they wanted their national bank. They wanted a Fed Reserve system. They wanted to print our money, and then they would charge us interest. That's what happens today, folks. You have $50,000 in your account. You think you're rich, but, you know, that money, when it was printed, a certain percentage of it went to the Fed Reserve. It's not treasury notes. It used to be, when I was a boy, we would have treasury notes. Treasury certificates. It said right there on the $1 bill, this is a treasury certificate. Redeemable for $1 in silver. You could take it to a bank and say, I want my silver. And did you know the bank would take your dollar, and it might take 2 weeks, but they would send you a bit of silver? They would weigh it and all that stuff and send it. It was redeemable by silver. Now it says, well, this is a paper. It's a piece of paper, a Federal Reserve note. It's not redeemable with anything. If it's good, well, it's good for buying things, I suppose. Maybe today, but maybe not tomorrow. But the treasury certificate, back when I was a kid, was always good for getting silver. And silver, gold, could always be used for about anything. I want to talk today, friends. Listen, this is very important. This is what the Illuminati is all about. It's about money, about the money men, about the Rothschild Bank and its many subsidiaries. I want to talk about the American presidents, how they have been in favor of the Illuminati. They have worked with them, cooperated with them. They have been a traitor against America. But many of them have been heroes. Many American presidents in the past, not so much recently, but in the past, have been heroes. I'm also going to talk about the villains. There are villains out there, but they're heroes. And, you know, we don't talk about them very much. A lot of people criticize America and its presidents. And we talk about what bad presidents we've had, but we've had some good ones too. I mean, America has been a heroic country in the past. And thank God for it. The churches of America have been great. They've stood up for freedom in the past. They don't do that so much anymore. It's materialism, and that's why I wrote my new book, Pastors and Churches Gone Wild. They've gone wild for materialism. For carnal things, for degradation, for evil. But that wasn't always the case. There have always been great pastors in America's history, stood up for freedom and liberty and Jesus Christ. I want to talk about these bankers and presidents. You know, there have been presidents that were assassinated because they stood up against the bankers. They fought the Illuminati. Some of them won, some of them didn't. but they fought. They did it for you and me, and they've gone down in history, and I want to recognize them. For example, Andrew Jackson. Now, if you're an Indian, you may not like him, because, boy, he fought the Indians down in Florida. What kind of Indians are there? Seminole, I think. Yeah, Seminoles, boy. Wow. He hated the Indians, but he loved America. He was the 7th president of the United States. Did you know he ran for president the first time, and he won the popular vote and lost the presidency? That's right. He won the popular vote and lost the presidency. He lost in the Electoral College. So he ran again, and this time the people wanted to make sure, and it was a landslide, and he went into office. He was a great president. Back around, 1824, I think he passed away. Now, in 1816, the privately owned Bank of the United States, similar to our Federal Reserve, the Congress passed a bill to set it up. Unfortunately, though, or fortunately for us, Andrew Jackson vetoed it. In his veto message to Congress, he made two famous statements. Listen to this. The bank is trying to kill me, but I will kill it. That's pretty plain, isn't it? The bank wanted to kill him. And he wasn't just woofing. He wasn't just joking, folks. There was an attack on his life. January 31, 1835, an attempt to assassinate President Andrew Jackson, a man named Richard Lawrence, probably Jewish. The guns misfired. And then Lawrence was disarmed. President Jackson had to be held back from beating Lawrence with his cane. Oh, my. This was the first assassination attempt of a president of the United States. You see, Andrew Jackson says, while I'm president, there will not be a privately owned national bank. He said the bold effort the present bank has made to control the government is a premonition of the fate that awaits the American people should they ever be deluded into a perpetuation of this institution. Listen to what he told the bankers. He said, gentlemen, I have had men watching you for a long time. And I'm convinced that you have used the funds of your bank to speculate in the breadstuffs of this country. When you won, you divided the profits among you. And when you lost, you charged it to the bank. You tell me that if I take the deposits from the bank and annul its charter, I shall ruin 10,000 families. That may be true, gentlemen, but that is your sin. Should I let you go on, you will ruin 50,000 families. And that would be my sin. He said, you are a den of vipers and thieves. You know, that sounds a little bit like Jesus. What did he tell the Jews? You're a den of vipers. You know, they were stealing souls. Stealing souls. That's Mystery Babylon the Great. Revelation 18 says they'll steal men's souls. Wow. And Andrew Jackson, if Congress has the right under the Constitution to issue paper money, it was given to be used by themselves, not to be delegated to individuals or corporations. Duh. President Obama, are you listening? President Bush, President Clinton, President Carter. Congress only has the right to issue money. You can't delegate it to something called the Federal Reserve, a private bank. You say, oh, it's not a private bank, Tex. Oh, really? Yes, it is. I know what the Fed Reserve is. It's a private bank. It's not owned by the U.S. government. Not at all. One thing that Andrew Jackson did trust, though, he trusted the Bible. He says, the Bible is the rock on which our republic rests. What? What? It doesn't rest on the bank? The Fed Reserve system? No. Well, a little bit later on, around 1849, 1850, President Zachary Taylor came. You know, Andrew Jackson was a military man. You know the Battle of 1812, Battle of New Orleans? You heard of that song, haven't you? In 1814, I think it was, I took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. I took a little bacon and I took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town called New Orleans. Well, anyway, I could sing that for you, but I know you don't want me to. I know you're either going to go on with your speaking text. Okay, I won't try to sing again. Well, President Zachary Taylor was a military man too. I remember President Taylor was down fighting the Mexicans down in Mexico. And then the president was complaining to him that he wasn't doing a good job or something. The Congress was complaining. He was down there fighting in Mexico. They were complaining about him. So he up and wrote a letter to the press. Here he went out of the command and wrote a letter to the press. He said, "I'm getting shot at from my front and I'm getting shot at from my back. I don't know which is worse. My enemies in America or my enemies in Mexico." Now, President Zachary Taylor, he died after eating a bowl of cherries and milk. Some say he was killed by arsenic poisoning. Here's what he said. He refused to go along with a national bank. He said no country could prosper without a sound currency. He disagreed with his opponents. He said, "We will not promote a national bank." And he also opposed, by the way, the extension of slavery. He said the Bank of the United States was dead and it's gone. "The idea of a national bank is dead and will not be revived in my time." Well, they wanted to kill him. They probably did kill him. Then there was another president shortly after him, President James Buchanan. He also suffered from arsenic poisoning. Boy, they were trying to kill these people, weren't they? They were against the national bank. He was the 15th president of the United States. He suffered from arsenic poisoning. He went to a banquet and 38 people died from what they ate. Now, either there was a terrible cook there or they had arsenic poisoning. President Buchanan got sick, but he didn't die. He was a friend of Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory. He opposed the unconstitutional schemes of the Bank of the United States. He said, "I oppose entangling alliances." Remember George Washington in his farewell address told Americans, avoid entangling alliances, like we have with Israel. Don't have a favorite country. Be independent. Be American. Be America first. That's what President Buchanan said. He said, "We should avoid entangling alliances. This has been our policy since the days of George Washington, and its wisdom no one will attempt to dispute." Well, they do now. "Oh, I'm going to defend Israel. Oh, yes, Israel is our special friend in the Middle East." No, it's not. They kill all the sailors on USS Liberty. They were responsible. They helped blow up the World Trade Center in 2001. You know they did. It's true. They're evil. They're evil. We have all these entangling alliances with them. Then there's Abraham Lincoln. You know, I was sort of a Southerner. I'm from East Texas. We favored the South. When I was a kid, we favored the South and the Confederacy and all that. We didn't want slavery. I was against that, but I did sort of like the idea of a Southern government. Yeah, let's be independent. It's okay. Let's free the slaves, but let's be independent. Well, I didn't much like Abraham Lincoln, but they made him out to be such a hero. You know, maybe he was a hero after all. Now I have it back and forth. We could talk a whole program about Abraham Lincoln. He was the 16th president of the United States, but I know one thing. He fought the bankers. That might have been why they killed him. He won the Civil War, but then he died. Wasn't around to see his success. You know, he needed money to finance his war against the South. And the international bankers offered him the money. They offered to give him a loan. They said, "We'll only charge you 24 to 36% interest." Think about that. They were going to bankrupt the United States, but he needed money to buy uniforms and weapons and so forth. He was very upset at the bankers who wanted to charge interest of 24 to 36%. How was he going to get money? Well, his Secretary of State said, "Mr. President, I have an idea. Why don't we just print the money?" And Lincoln said, "Can we do that?" He said, "Well, sure, you can print it. I'm the head of the Treasury Department. I can print the money. Just print up the money." Lincoln said, "Well, would it have any value?" "Well, why would the money printed up by private banks have value?" he said. President Lincoln said, "Let's do it. Let's try it." It was so successful, it amazed everybody. He printed over 400 million greenbacks, they were called. Debt and interest free. He didn't owe anybody. The bankers were really upset. They expected a bonanza, but they didn't get it. Wow. U.S. Treasury. They printed up this money. It was amazing. That was the solution that Lincoln had. Now, here's what Lincoln said. Listen to this. He said, the money powers prey upon the nation in times of peace and conspire against it in times of adversity. It is more despotic than a monarchy, more insolent than autocracy, and more selfish than bureaucracy. It denounces as public enemies all who questions its method or throw light upon its crimes. I have two great enemies, the Southern Army in front of me and the bankers in the rear. Of the two enemies, the one in my rear is my greatest foe. Isn't that something? The bankers were fighting him. In 1865, right before he died, Congress said, okay, the war is over. We don't need these greenbacks anymore. Let's go back to a national bank. But here's what Lincoln said. Listen to what he said. Listen very carefully. This is his opposition to a Federal Reserve System or a national bank. He said, quote, it is an old maxim and a very sound one that he that dances should always pay the fiddler. Now, sir, in the present case, if any gentleman whose money is a burden to them choose to lead off a dance, I am decidedly opposed to the people's money being used to pay the fiddler. Wow. These capitalists, he said, generally act harmoniously and in concert to fleece the people. And now that they have got in a quarrel with themselves, we are called upon to appropriate the people's money to settle the quarrel. When the economy gets in trouble and the capitalists are all fighting each other like happened here in America in 2007, well, the government has to go and bail them out. He said, I'm not going to do that. He opposed a bank, and he was killed. And I suspect one of the reasons was the money. By the way, one of the quotes I liked about from Abraham Lincoln was this. Well, right after he became president, he said this. He said, I have been told I was on the road to hell, but I had no idea it was just a mile down the road with a dome on it. He meant, of course, the U.S. Capitol building where the congressmen were. I have been told I was on the road to hell, but I had no idea it was just a mile down the road with a dome on it. Well, oh, he said, quote, the government should create, issue, and circulate all the currency and credit needed to satisfy the spending power of the government and the buying power of consumers. The privilege of creating and issuing money is not only the supreme prerogative of government, but it's the government's greatest creative opportunity. The financing of all public enterprise and the conduct of the treasury will become matters of practical administration. Money will cease to be master and will then become a servant of humanity. I can see why he was assassinated. Now, whether you agree with him or not on things like, you know, the Civil War, there's a reason that he fought that. You know, the Rothschilds love the Confederacy. They intended to establish a national bank down in the South. That's right. You see, the Secretary of State and Secretary of Treasury was a man named Judah P. Benjamin. He was the second ranking guy down south. He was right behind the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis. They were pals. Judah P. Benjamin was a slave owner, and he was a Jewish man. I say he was second because the vice president was a weakling and really had no authority at all. So it was Jefferson Davis and Judah Benjamin. They controlled the Southern government. And Judah P. Benjamin was a Rothschild agent. A Rothschild agent in the South. The Rothschilds would have basically owned the place. And of course the Pope was involved too. He favored the South. Did you know that one of the conspirators ran off through Canada, ran off to the papacy and the Vatican in Rome, and well, he became the hidden, a fugitive, a criminal, hidden by the Vatican. That's right. The Vatican and Rothschild. They work together. How could the Jews and the Catholics work together? Well, folks, you need the book, Bloody Zion. We offer it here in the ministry. It's by Edward Henry. It's a great book. By the way, we also have Solving the Mystery of Babylon the Great by Henry, another great book. You'll find it out of the Catholic Church. Their money is taken care of. They have a bank that takes care of the money for them. It's the Rothschild banks. That's right. Back in 1836, Rothschild became the master of the Vatican Bank. Well, we have another assassination, James Garfield. He was the 20th president of the United States. He said this. He said, whoever controls the money in any country is absolute master of industry and commerce. Whoever controls the money in any country is absolute master of industry and commerce. In 1881, it was proposed to him that America have a private national bank. He said no. He said the chief duty of the national government, this is Mr. James Garfield, a written statement by him, the chief duty of the national government in connection with the currency is to coin money and declare its value. Grave doubts have been entertained whether Congress is authorized by the Constitution to make any form of paper money legal tender. The present issue of United States notes has been sustained by the necessities of war. But such paper should depend for its value and currency upon its convenience and use and its prompt redemption in coin at the will of the holder. Wow. You hold paper money, you ought to be able to get it redeemed for gold and silver. That's what President James Garfield said. These notes are not money. They're just paper, he said. But promises to pay money. That's all they are. If the holders demand it, the promise should be kept. Well, if you got $100 in your pocket, you ought to be able to go down and get $100 in gold for it. That's what he said. Interesting, isn't it? He said, by the experience of commercial nations in all ages, it has been found that gold and silver afford the only safe foundation for a monetary system. James Garfield. Wow. However, let me tell you something, folks. You think now, well, gold's going to save me. Silver's going to save us. The federal notes are no good. I only trust gold and silver. You better watch out, friends. You see, that was then. Today is now. And guess who controls the silver? Guess who controls the gold markets? That's right, the big banks. J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs. Yeah, they control the gold and the silver markets. They state what the value of gold and silver will be. And you think you've just got a mint. I've got $10,000 worth of gold in my savings account. It could be worth $10 tomorrow or $10 million, depending on what the Rothschilds say. I warn people. They say, we need our dollar based on gold. We need to back it with gold. Not so fast, my friends. What about controlling the gold? It's 2015 in America. And the book of James in the Bible has a very interesting couple of verses. I'm going to tell you about them when I get back. I worry about these people. They say, well, Ron Paul says that we need to take our money from the Fed Reserve. We need to back it with gold. And we'll see about that. We'll see what the Bible has to say about those who own money and gold. When the times get hard, you better watch it. I'm Tex Mars. We're going to be back in just a minute with more about the presidents and the Illuminati. I'm going to talk about deportation. Hey, who sponsored immigration bills? Who deported illegal aliens from America? Would the presidents do that? We know Obama's invited them in. Who kicked them out? We'll find out in just a minute, right here on Power of Prophecy. Hello again, Tex Mars here. I hope you have my new book. It's entitled, Pastors and Churches gone wild. Has the Christian establishment gone berserk? Think about it. Pastors and churches gone wild. You know, I wouldn't make a statement like that. I wouldn't put it on the cover of my book. I wouldn't give you hundreds of true accounts in the book unless they were true. You know, somebody said the truth will set you free, but first it will make you miserable. Well, that's not entirely true, because the truth really is Jesus Christ, his truth. He will set you free. But before he does, you're going to be miserable. And I'm a little bit miserable looking at the Christian church today. I'm miserable because I know it shouldn't be. And we have a church of Lucifer, a church of Satan. We have the Muslims and the Jews and the Hindus and the Buddhists all operating in America. And why shouldn't they? They look at the Christian church and see the decrepit nature, the horrible degradations, the horrible evil, and the tomfoolery, just the nonsense that goes on in these churches. The nonsense. I mean, are these crazy men or what? They're off their rockers. Well, I had too much of it. I just had to write a book about them. I have so many examples. People all over the United States and the world have sent me stories. What's going on in their local church? And believe me, it's in your church too. It's in your town. It's in your community. Where do these people get off bringing discredit to the Christian church? Folks, I wouldn't dare to do that. I would not dare to blaspheme the name of Jesus. I would not dare to say things are in the Bible that are not there. I wouldn't do that. You wouldn't either. You know you wouldn't. You couldn't sleep at night thinking you had harmed the Christian church. Well, these men, they deserve all the discredit and abuse that we can heap on their heads. And I hope they'll repent of these things. But I want you to see the kind of men I'm talking. I'm talking about the big names. I'm talking about Billy Graham. I'm talking about Rick Warren. I'm talking about Joel Osteen. I'm talking about all of these big name people and little people too. The heads of denominations are as stupid as anyone else. The big time evangelists, name after name, it's incredible. Pastors and churches gone wild. Some say, Tex, you should just, you know, we need to clean our own stable. We need to clean our own house. Don't tell the world out there about this. The world already knows, friends. The world reads its local newspapers. The world knows what I know, and they think a lot less of the church than you and I do, even. They're making fun of it. They're laughing. We're laughing stocks. No wonder there's a church of Satan. People say, Tex, you shouldn't bring dishonor to the Christian church. This is not the Christian church. This is the establishment, the denominations, the big buildings with names on them. And they say, you know, First Baptist Church or First Assembly of God or First Presbyterian. That's baloney. These are evil people. Well, you know, Jesus really was not a miracle worker. He was just a man. Yeah, well, you're not even a man. Well, you know, the blood of Jesus doesn't mean anything at all. No, it doesn't. Who said that? You say that? You're a liar. It means everything. Well, I tell you what. I wrote this book because I'm defending Christianity. I know, I state in the book, there are moms and pops out there. Moms and pops. And you are going to stand up for Jesus Christ. You're not going to bend. You're not going to break. You're not going to be a piece of plastic that somebody can just jerk you all over and make you flexible and be anything that the world wants you to be. You're going to stand up for Christ. You're going to be like a flint, like a piece of flint. I'm telling you, folks, there are people out there that won't bend. Like that hymn about the men who were thrown into the lion's den by Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't burn. They didn't bend. They didn't break. I believe there are Americans today who are true Christians who will be so angry at these evil establishment ministers and theologians and evangelists. You'll be mad at them. You'll be angry, and you should be. Good for you. Jesus was too. He overthrew the table of the money changers in the temple. He wasn't a mild man. He was angry at them. He said, you're of your father, the devil, and his works you will do. He was pretty blunt. Now, maybe some people think I'm too blunt. How could you write a book like that? I've never heard of a book like that. Pastors and churches gone wild? Has the Christian establishment gone berserk? Who would write a book like that? Well, I'll tell you who would write a book like that. A man who is sick and tired of these people. I want you to buy as many copies as you can of this book and give them to all your friends and say, here's somebody that's standing up and I'm going to stand with him. Would you do that for me? Please. Here's how to order your copy. $22. It's a little oversized book. It's got color pictures in it. $22 plus $5 shipping and handling. $27. Of course, when you write to us and you order this book, we're going to extend your subscription for 6 months to our Power of Prophecy newsletter. 6 months. We're going to give you the free newsletter. Here's how to get your book. Just call us toll free. 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. Or write to us, Power of Prophecy, or to text Mars. 1708 Patterson Road, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. That's 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. We've been here for many years. And by the way, this is our 30th anniversary. We've been fighting the devil for 30 years. You know, I was just reading about James Garfield here. You know what he says? He says, a brave man is a man who dares to look the devil in the face and tell him he is a devil. I really believe that's the way some of these people are out there, Jerry. I'm talking to Jerry, my broadcast engineer. That's the way these folks are. I get your letters. I know. You're these folks out there, listen to this program. They're going to get this book and are going to do something about it in their community. They're going to inform themselves, first of all. They're going to educate themselves on what's really going on in the Christian establishment today. They believe James Garfield, President Garfield. He said, a brave man is a man who dares to look the devil in the face and tell him he's a devil. That was Jesus Christ. He did look the devil in the face. Remember, the devil took him on that high place up in the wilderness and offered him all the kingdoms of the world. He said, don't try to tempt me. I'm the Lord your God. Don't try to tempt me. And I think that's the way these folks are. Now, friends, for those of you who wonder about Tex Mars, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not going to mess you up. I'm not going to go out and you're not going to read about me taking dope or smoking pot. You're not going to hear about me having an affair with some woman somewhere. You're not going to, you know, that's what, I'm not going to do those things. I guarantee it. I guarantee it 100%. Why? Because I don't want to do those things. I want to serve Jesus. I want to do what's right. I want to serve you. I want to serve God. I want to go to my grave not having done those things. Now, I may have been a bad, bad boy back when I was a young man before I knew Jesus. That was then. Now is now. I've grown up. I've grown up with Jesus Christ in my heart. I'd be a fool to do those things. Everything I say on this program, I mean, I say it, I do it, and you can count on it. I may not be the smartest man in the world. I may not be the most intelligent. I may not be the best writer. I may not be the greatest speaker, but I am an honest man. You can count on that. Okay. Now, every once in a while, I do mess up. You know, there are things I can't remember. And Wanda reminds me all the time of them. You can't remember that? No, I can't. I guess I'm, you know, getting a little old. I can't remember that. I just don't. That's my greatest, I don't guess that's a sin when you can't remember. It's just, you know, maybe some things I don't want to remember. I don't know. Maybe. Well, anyway, enough of that. I don't often tell you that, folks, but it's true. I just want you to know. I don't brag to you. I don't say, you know, I'm a great man or anything like that. I may be a very weak man. I may not be much of a saint, but I am an honest and true man, and I'm going to remain that way. So people may call me the devil and call me anti-Semitic and whatever they want to call me. It doesn't matter. I don't even worry about that anymore. I don't even listen to their letters. They don't mean anything to me. I have fun with them. I enjoy them. In fact, I'll invite anybody that writes me bad letters and just hates me. I invite them to come up and have a cup of coffee with me. We'll talk about it. I'm not going to get mad at you. I don't get mad at people. I don't. I know they don't know me. They don't know the Bible. They don't understand who Jesus is. Once they do, maybe they'll change. Maybe they won't. I'll give them every chance to. The Bible says even a heretic, give him two admonitions and then reject him. Give him a couple chances. I'm willing to do that. You write me a mean letter, I'll write you back and say, well, you're wrong, but here's your chance to repent. And if I'm wrong, I'll say I'm sorry. I'll go home. Okay, that's enough. That's enough. Please order this book. You're going to love this book. A lot of people love it. Go to powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. It's right there. You'll see a description of the book, the cover. I like the cover. By the way, Jerry's also my web man. He does the internet page, does a great job of it. Sandra works here in the ministry. Sandra formats my books. She did the cover. And I used to do my own covers, choose my own covers. And then she started doing so good, my covers didn't look so good in comparison with hers. So I just let her do it. Got somebody good and they're doing it. We'll just go right on. I like that. Yeah, Wanda doesn't let me do any of her cooking, by the way. Yeah, she used to let me cook a little bit, just for fun. I'd say, I can cook that. She'd say, really? Now she doesn't trust me. She doesn't believe me anymore. I think she's unfair to me. Don't you think so, Jerry? She's unfair. I'm a great cook. Okay, you caught me in a lie there. I'm not a great cook. Okay, let's just go to our regular program now. We're looking at the presidents of the Illuminati. The Illuminati's been here a long time. They're not a one-generation, one-shot organization. I mean, there actually is an organization of the Illuminati started by a gentleman from Switzerland and Austria. He's founded the Illuminati in May 1, 1776. That's why May 1st is International Labor Day. All the labor unions grabbed that day and, well, socialists love it. The communists love it. They had a big May 1 parade. May Day. Yeah, they have the Maypole. You know, a terrible sexual festival and carnival. Well, we go from President Garfield to President William McKinley. The turn of the century into the 20th century from about 1900, he was the President of the United States. He also advocated a gold standard. He had passed the Gold Standard Act of 1900, making gold a standard. That was back before, of course, certain people owned the gold market. Don't believe Ron Paul now. Yeah, he's a good man, but he's got it mixed up. We need a gold standard for America's money. Forget it. Listen, the reputation of the United States of America is solid gold. The reputation. We can issue our own money. We don't need a Fed Reserve. And we don't need gold backing it. We've got the reputation of the working men and women, the brains, the intelligence of you, the American workers. And if you're not a worker, it's because you're retired, because you did work. Maybe you can't anymore. You're disabled or whatever. But you lend your talents, you lend your ingenuity in some way to America. This is a great country. So far, I know Donald Trump has the motto, make America great again. Well, we can be great again. We really can be. We're a great country. We're a little fallen now. We've a little collapsed. We're down in the hole a bit, but we can reach up. We can pull ourselves out with God's help. William McKinley said this. He said, our financial system needs some revision. The value of our money must never be threatened. Our currency should continue under the supervision of the government, not the Fed Reserve. They print money and then they charge you for it. They charge interest on their money. And then they keep all the money and the banks that own the Federal Reserve, they keep all the money for themselves. What's that all about? Why shouldn't the government print its own money? Abraham Lincoln did that. He printed the greenbacks. Another one that did it, by the way, was John F. Kennedy. Now, a lot of people are down on him. There's sexual peccadilloes. He did all kind of bad things, but he was a great president in many ways. That's why he was murdered. He had an executive order, by the way, and the executive order called for the issuance of new currency. You see, they got in back in 1913 under Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson was a scoundrel. The Illuminati put a man, Colonel Mandel House. Colonel House was right there in the White House. He told the president what to do. And President Wilson, you see, he had a scandal on his record. He had had an affair with a young lady back in Princeton University where he taught. And they knew he had this affair. They covered it up for him. And they said, as long as you do what we want, you're okay. What do you want? We want World War I. They got it. We want a Federal Reserve Act. In 1913, they demanded that, and they got it. We want an Internal Revenue Service, the IRS. In 1913, they got that. Three great horrors he gave them. Number one, a world war. Number two, the IRS. Number three, the Fed Reserve, all because of Woodrow Wilson. And, of course, Colonel House. By the way, Colonel House was a member of the Illuminati, the formal Illuminati group, the one, you know, founded by Adam Bassett back in 1776. Well, you say, how do I know that? I actually have the certificate of membership, an ancient document. You know, a gentleman, as a friend of this ministry, gave me a copy of it. When Colonel House was in Beaumont, Texas, he went down there because the oil, all the oil was coming up there in the Spindletop oil fields, and Colonel House went down there and he joined the Illuminati. There was a chapter of it there. Order of the Illuminati, Colonel House. He was a scoundrel too. Well, John F. Kennedy cleared up things. He said, we're going to print our own money. Boy, the Fed Reserve was upset about that. He printed up $4 billion of this of new currency. It was issued through the U.S. Treasury. Again, the Treasury's silver certificates. It wasn't the Federal Reserve notes. It was the last time we had true Treasury certificates. You could get silver for your money. It was issued debt and interest free. $4 billion. No wonder they killed the man. He was only in the presidency for 3 years. 3 years. In 1963, he opposed the Fed Reserve. It was rumored that he was going to break it apart. And he already printed $4 billion of this new money. And they killed him. November 22, 1963. Now, Gerald Ford was president, of course, back in 75, was it? He refused to give a bailout to the city of New York. It got in financial trouble. The headline in the New York Daily News said, Ford to city, drop dead. Well, Ford never told the city of New York that, but he did refuse to give any money. They attempted to kill Gerald Ford twice. His vice president was Nelson Rockefeller, one of the Rockefellers. They figured if they killed Gerald Ford, then Rockefeller, of course, would become the president. His family were Chase Manhattan Bank. Now, Rockefeller and Rothschild now worked together very closely. At that time, they were competitors even. Rockefeller would have been president of the United States. But the assassination didn't work. Gerald Ford once said, government big enough to give you everything you want is a government big enough to take from you everything you have. Well, then, President Ronald Reagan. Now, he started deified. He's made into a god by men today. He had his faults. He really did. But you know something about President Ronald Reagan? The Jews, Israel wanted him to go to the Middle East and start fighting for them, to destabilize those countries. And he was pressured by his aides. Of course, George Shultz was the Secretary of the Treasury. And he said, Mr. President, we've got to get involved in the Middle East. And he sent around 300 Marines. Just 300 or so into Lebanon. And guess what? And the next thing that happened was they had a big bombing of the Marine barracks there and killed, I think it was 296 of them. They were all in their barracks sleeping, and a terrorist drove a truck in with a bomb in it and killed them all. Then they went and told President Reagan, now we've really got to go in. We've got to go in and fight. We've got to fight these terrorists. Let's send in thousands of troops into Lebanon, into the Middle East. Look what they've done. They've killed our soldiers, our Marines there in their barracks in Lebanon. We've got to go. We've got to get a war going. You know what Ronald Reagan said? I listened to you the first time. You told me to put men there. You told me if I put a contingent of Marines there, they wouldn't dare to fight us. They wouldn't dare to cause problems. It would mean a peacekeeping mission, but they killed our Marines. And now you want me to put thousands of Marines on the ground, boots on the ground? He said, forget it. I'm pulling all of our troops out. And he did. No Middle East wars, he said. No. Wow. That made the Jews angry. That made them so angry. Well, by the way, Reagan, I want to read you something he said. It's great. This is fantastic. He wanted to cut the size of government. He wanted to take away the government's rights, as they called it, to tax you terribly. Now listen, this is something he read from the Internal Revenue Service. Listen, this is Ronald Reagan. Now listen to this very carefully. I'm going to read it to you exactly. I just wanted, this is Ronald Reagan speaking, I just wanted to speak to you about something from the Internal Revenue Code. It is the last sentence of Section 509A of the Code, and it reads, for purposes of Paragraph 3, an organization described in Paragraph 2 shall be deemed to include an organization described in Section 501C4, 5, or 6, which would be described in Paragraph 2 if it were an organization described in Section 501C3. And that's just one sentence out of those 57 feet of books. Did you understand what he was saying? Oh, you didn't? Well, then, I think you're normal, friends. What he was saying was, this Internal Revenue Code, there's 57 feet of books. 57 feet, how long is that? Now, the room I'm in here is probably about 20 feet wide. That's three times as wide as this, as wide as your house. You'd have to have an entire library just to have all the books of the IRS. How can you possibly do a 1040? Well, you can't. Now, most people have to go see these tax preparer services, and they charge you 40 or 50 or 100 bucks, maybe more, because the tax code is so terrible. He says, we need to stop. We need to make it more simple. Of course, since he's died and gone away, now the tax code is even worse. It's probably twice as long. They keep inventing new ways to take your money. And, of course, there are a bunch of crooks there. There are a bunch of corrupt people. But they were investigated recently. We all found out what a crook this Miss Lerner was. But they've let her go. The Justice Department said we can't find anything to charge them with. Hey, they'd be under the jailhouse, not in it. They're all crooks there. I'll probably be audited by the IRS for telling you that. I was already audited once. The audit lasted 4 years. They didn't find anything. They didn't find anything in this ministry, but they took 4 years to tell me you're okay. I hope you spent thousands of dollars for accounting fees and attorney's fees, but you're all right. Oh, man. They just wanted to harass me. And they did. Oh, my. Hey, by the way, I had some fun. I told the IRS agent, Jesus went to dinner with a tax man. He said, what? I said, yeah, it's in the Bible right here. You know, Zacharias was in a tree looking down. He wanted to see when Jesus came by. The crowd was so big, he got up in that tree and looked down. And Jesus said, I'm going to go to dinner with you. And he said, really? I said, that's right. He chose a tax collector to have dinner with. He said, well, that's good. I said, well, yes, it is. In fact, the tax collector was so thrilled having Jesus. He said, I want to repent of all the wrongs that I've done. I want to restore the money I cheated from people. He restored the money he had taken from the people. Now, that's a tax man, isn't it? Of course, the tax collector, he didn't restore anything to me, but anyway. You know, that's interesting, isn't it? Jesus was willing to choose anybody to be his servant. Friends, you think you've got some sin in your life? You think I've done things he would never forgive me? I'm not worthy. Well, you're probably not worthy, but he'll still forgive you. He loves you. That's the nice thing about it. I didn't go to Jesus and say, I'm so worthy. I'm so great a man. I need you. You need to go ahead and save me because I'm just worth it. You don't want to go to Jesus like that. You want to tell him the truth. I don't deserve anything. I don't deserve it, Lord. Come in my life. Please save me. Please make me whole. Please guide me. Come in my life. Please let me serve you.
please. Now that's when Jesus will listen to you. When you're down in the valley, when you're looking up, when you need help, when you feel so insignificant, when you feel the whole world's collapsing, maybe you lost your job, you lost a loved one, maybe you just feel so down. That's when Jesus, that's when he'll work. That's when he'll work for you. He is your friend. A lot of people think, well, Jesus is so, he's so up there, he's so big and powerful. I hate to bother him. Well, he wants you to bother him, I guess. He asked you to. He told his disciples, you know, he went up and prayed and they all fell asleep while he was praying. He said, can't you tarry with me just an hour? And he told them, I'm your friend. Isn't that something? God told his disciples, we are friends. He still tells people that today. You want a friend? You say, I don't have a friend. Nobody likes me. I can't even get a date. Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's your personality. I don't know what's wrong with you. Maybe nothing. Maybe you believe in Jesus Christ, and that's why nobody wants to be your friend. Well, he'll be your friend. You say, well, my dad treated me terrible. He was a terrible person. He beat me. He did terrible things to me or my sister or whatever. I didn't have a father. I didn't have a mother. I was an orphan. Well, then you're in good luck today, friends. Jesus Christ, he'll be your father. He'll act as your mother. When people have nothing, they're in an orphan's home. They say, I don't even have parents. And then that's when Jesus comes in. You know, we work with these kids at the Texas Children's Home, at the ranch there where those boys are. Their parents, some of them had terrible parents. Their fathers are in prison. You feel so sorry for them. I'll tell you something. You just tell them. And you've got Jesus and you've got power of prophecy. We love you and Jesus loves you. You've got it made. You've got everything you need. That's what Jesus told me in this ministry. You've got everything you need, Tex. I'm going to give you everything you need. He didn't give me a big building. He didn't give me a skyscraper. He didn't give us millions of dollars, but he's given me enough. Whatever I need. I get offerings from people like you. I get donations. They're small, but they mean a lot. $10, $20, they mean a lot. He gives me everything I need. Well, we've talked about the Illuminati today. Oh, there's so much more we could talk about. I want to tell you about the deportations. Did you know that Herbert Hoover ordered the deportation of all illegal aliens? Why? To make jobs for American citizens that desperately needed work during the Great Depression. He ordered the deportation of all illegal aliens. Harry Truman deported 2 million illegal aliens after World War II. Why? To create jobs for returning veterans. Dwight Eisenhower in 1954 deported 13 million Mexicans. They call it Operation Wetback. Think about that. The veterans from World War II and Korean War, they needed jobs. Dwight Eisenhower said, we're going to deport all these Mexicans. They're not our citizens. He deported them. And then you say today, we can't deport these Mexicans. We can't deport these foreigners, these illegal aliens. It's not going to happen. I've heard that so often. Baloney. We can deport them. We are America first. But we love everybody. But we're America first. The presidents of the United States, we've had some great ones. Hoover, Truman, Eisenhower. They deported them. Well, we've talked about the villains today. Been some villains. And we've talked about some heroes. We'll have another program like this. I enjoyed this today. Folks, I enjoyed being with you. I pray that you'll tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.